messianic consciousness or whatever, and they speak about the birth pangs. A shift of consciousness has to happen, and the people from the 60s that started all of these important movements, they were towards shifting the consciousness of the world. And if they would be embraced, if people would say, acknowledge, yes, the world is reached a state where this change has to happen. We can't keep destroying the world. We can't continue to be selfish and greedy and oppress people. We have to acknowledge the equality of people, appreciate other peoples, other cultures, other colors, other religions. If this is embraced, then that shift could happen peacefully and without a lot of conflict. But if it's not embraced, then the new culture clashes with the old culture, and this is described as like the birth pangs of the Mashiach. Now, a lot of this stuff has been written about in popular literature, books like The Turning Point, and so that idea is well known. But again, this idea of fun and play, I think it's very much related to creativity in general, and it's related to the aesthetic appreciation. I think that people are flocking to entertainment because they need to feel this desire for fun and for play, and I think that's a very deep and profound thing.
Some people also have the feel to connect the things. For instance, this whole movement, this whole week, is a connection. And in a way, it's entertainment too. But connection.
I think it was part of the conference for Carla.
Exactly. Beautiful music, people that are knowledgeable like yourself, things like that.
Yeah, I think the more we can connect, the more fun we can have.
It is a matter of entertainment.
Yes. I think that Ruach HaKodesh has to do with that element of fun and that element of connection. Okay, now I guess we'll get to some of this stuff. This idea of fun and play, it has to do with being open and free. Somebody who's rigid and clogged, like blocked up, can have fun. The energies can't flow if there's too much rigidity. I think also, like, as far as anything is concerned, for something to be totally creative, you have to have that, the channels have to be open. It has to be a playful attitude. It has to be.
And how do you know? Not necessarily Krishna, but how does one know? How does one make the judgment, either about oneself or about a group? Or about a situation in terms of its rigidity and its boundaries. And I'm thinking of the Haredi community, but I mean it in a more general sense.
Well, one way to tell is if you're not into it, if it stops being fun and it becomes, and it, for you, if it becomes a prison, it becomes a trap, and you're doing it without really enjoying it, then the energy is being blocked. Okay, let me just get into this a little bit. This concept of the shin and the mem and the aleph. It's related to right brain, left brain, and the interplay between them. Now, the right brain is a holistic type of approach. It's related to chokhmah, and the left brain is a more reductionistic approach. It's related to bina. Right brain, left brain. In Sefer Yetzirah, it says, "Havein b'chokhmah v'chakem b'bina." Be wise with understanding. Understand with wisdom, and be wise with understanding. The Sefer Yetzirah is telling us that you have to take the right brain and use it, like have this interplay between the two, have this relationship of right brain to left brain to right brain. You have to make this tension of a dynamic flow between the two. Now, I think this relates to simple everyday things. Arya Kaplan, in several of his books, he defines Chochmah and Bina as similarity and difference. Chochmah is similarity. When we use our right brains, we are sort of asking ourselves, in our thinking of something, we're asking, how is this similar? When we use our left brain, we're asking, how is this different? Okay, similarity and difference. There's a very interesting book I read recently. It's called Science, Order, and Creativity by David Bohm. Has anybody read it? It's a good book, wasn't it? David Bohm and David Peat. P-E-A-T. There he spoke about this idea of creativity relating to play. There he says like this, that perception is a creative process. The very act of perceiving something is creative. It's not passive, like I said before about sensory perception coming in our senses from the outside. We tend to think that it's passive, that our eyes and ears are just like windows and our mind is just like receiving that input how it is. But it's not that's not so. The majority of the image that we make in our mind comes from our own minds. What comes from the outside is only a small part. It's a creative process that when we look at something, it's our minds that immediately interpret what we see and make order out of it. In this book, he defines order as similar differences and different similarities. What does that remind you of? But it's exactly be wise with understanding, understand with wisdom, be wise with understanding. Similar differences and different similarity. That's how we make order out of things. Like when we look upon a group of people, we notice similarities and differences. We notice that people are different than the walls and the windows. We notice that difference. Then we notice, so therefore there are similarities between all the people, that there are people as opposed to chairs and walls and windows. We notice that similarity, but even among the peoples, we notice that there's differences between them, which makes us perceive each person as a separate being. This is a constant process that is happening in our minds all the time. The fact that we are living, thinking creatures, there's this constant interplay between the right brain and the left brain. We're constantly noticing similarity and differences. A lot of it is unconscious and some of it is conscious. For example, when an artist is like sketching a scene, then he becomes very conscious of these things. Right? Like if you if you're sketching something, you're very conscious if something moves, it's a big thing because you're consciously noticing the similarities and differences in what you're trying to sketch, and because you're making a conscious emphasis on it, your mind gets to be in a high state of tension between the interplay between the right brain and the left brain, and that tension is like a force field to bring down creativity. Okay. I'm sure we've all had the experience of working on some kind of problem, thinking about something. If we'll use an example of sketching. Okay, if a person is sketching a scene, or thinking about, in this book he uses the idea of thinking of a scientific problem. So the way that we approach a problem in our minds, we look at this side of it and we look at that side of it. We try and see the parts in the left brain perspective, then we try and see how it all fits together, the right brain perspective, and we try and fit it together and get to the state of da'at, which is knowing, connecting with it. Right? It's the process that we always go through. We analyze all the parts, right? And then we try and synthesize them together and we try and make it fit. We are in place and you go, of course, like a, you know, in the cartoons, the light bulb goes off. When it fits, it fits and you understand. You understand here in the heart, not just in the head. Very often, the resolution of the problem that we're trying to solve, it doesn't happen while we're working at it. We put in that energy by contemplating the idea. We'll contemplate it and make that tension in our minds, right brain, left brain, left brain, right brain. And very often it doesn't click. Very often, then we'll go and do something else, take a bath, relax, or something, and then when we're not thinking about it, the thought will just pop into our heads and the light bulb will go on and flash. Okay? Inspiration. Now, I believe that that is Ruach HaKodesh. Okay? In this book, The Way of God, he defines Ruach HaKodesh as when you really know something, when you know something in your heart with certainty and clarity. Again, that the fact that inspiration came down from above or within, wherever it comes from. At that moment, we like transcend ourselves. Okay, I think things when a human being does something truly creative, it's not when he's doing it from his own mind. Like we said, the second level, doing it from my own mind, my own human capabilities, that's not where you find genius. That's not where the great works of art or any great creative breakthroughs take place. It's not from the human, you know, human endeavor and our own intellect. It's only by transcending our own minds and connecting to our soul, bringing it down from our soul, can we really do those great things? And I think that if we recognize that this is a process that happens all the time, just the very awareness of it, that we were created in this way of having chokhma and bina, right brain and left brain, and the interaction between the two. In Kabbalah it's called zivug, unity, union between the two. That tension, that dynamic tension, is what ultimately draws down the inspiration from above and brings it down to da'at, which is that manifestation of the Ruach HaKodesh when we really know.
That's like unity between heaven and earth.
Unity between heaven and earth, the same thing. Unity between man and woman, right? When they unify, they transcend each other, and that going beyond each other is what draws down the soul from above, which manifests as the child that is born. All creativity is like that. That's the way it is. Okay, now you asked, well, how do you know? How can you tell what is going on? In this book also, he stressed the importance of play. That this idea of play and having fun is the idea of being into what you're doing. When a person, for example, when a person is like working on a painting or doing music or thinking about a problem in science or whatever it is that you do, if you're really there, if you throw yourself into it completely, that you're, as far as you're concerned, there's no other place that you'd rather be. And that you're enjoying to the utmost what it is that you're doing. You're not concerned about the time. You know, we've all experienced times like that where we're enjoying where we're at so much that we're not concerned of how many hours go by, and because the total enjoyment and fun in what we're doing.
It's like the moment is eternal. Just
it's like children know how to play, right? When they're playing, you see they're totally involved. The children are very good about play acting, and our education sort of removes that from us. We're taught not to be into what we're doing. We're taught not to do things for its own sake. We're taught to do it for external reward. And this is a very important point.
I understand the point, but a problem, and a question with that really, is that the Sifra Akra also has that same kind of Heshek. That small children can spend an enormous time mamish being like seraphim, like angels. Small children can also spend a lot of time being very cruel, and they get off, it looks like, about equally in the inner world. Sadism can spend a lot of time and a lot of cheshit, a lot of passion, a lot of totality of its being wrapped up in its sadism. And I think that we live in an era of a time that is manifest. But that is very clear that people do that, and it's hard for me. It's hard for me even to articulate the question. I mean, my question before was in dealing both in oneself and dealing with community and so on, how to recognize blockages. You're saying that is a quality of fun and of commitment to the thing that's happening. And generally I agree with that.
Also a playful attitude where you could embrace one thing and the thing and its opposite and be able to look at it from this side and look at it from that side in like a playful way where you could like switch from this perspective, switch to that perspective and see that it's all part of one unity.
So it's like seeing the value in everything as opposed to saying this is right and this is wrong.
Right. It's the value in everything. Right? Even good and evil. And I think that what you said is definitely true. It's related to what Barry said before, that the more light, on the other hand, there's also more darkness. But that's also a sign that this inspiration is coming down strong.
I think you're generalizing too much. My husband always used to say, people are more stupid than anybody. And what I mean by that in this respect, what percentage of people watch TV for enjoyment? How does the intelligence rating run according to what percentage watch this and watch that? I mean, there are certain shows I've heard of them, but I've never seen them or anything. I mean, there's certain grades of what you watch. You don't watch TV just for entertainment, but some people, and I think it's the majority of them, do. It's what quality do you watch on TV, or what percentage goes to shows, concerts, classical, all that. I think that has a lot to do with what you watch and what you want.
This actually also pertains, I think, to the whole notion that oftentimes one does something that is very unpleasant or difficult in order to get to the place where that thing is fun. In learning, I play sitar, and I played for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And my teachers, some of them were very hardcore around practice things, and that if you weren't bleeding from your fingers or very near, it really didn't feel that you had done your practice. Now, after about the third hour, fourth hour practice, it's a very taut stringed instrument, it stopped being fun. When there was no fun involved, do you understand what I mean? But working through that then comes, and so on, to the next step of fun. And it's, so you're talking about different levels of fun, aren't you?
See, I'm saying that when inspiration happens, it's because of the effort that was put into it. That's my whole point. It's not that it comes out of the blue, right? Practice is more practicing like scales or something like that. That's a very much left brain practice, left brain working on your left brain side. But it's important. In order, like, see, the more, let's bring it back to like the idea of prophecy in general, and as far as it relates to the world view. And the general idea is this, that the world is always the world, and a living creature is the natural state is to achieve a state of balance. Right? The more a person goes in one direction, naturally there's something that pulls him in the other direction so that he achieves a state of balance in the middle. Okay, let's think about like holistic perspective and reductionistic perspective. Let's think about like the very big and the very small. The prophets, it's brought to one of the son, Rabbi Abraham, the son of the Rambam. He speaks about meditation, about hit bodhidut, meditation. And he says there that the prophets would go out to in isolation, and there they would like contemplate things, like the wonders of nature. He writes there that they would contemplate the ocean and all that's contained in the ocean. They would contemplate the stars, right? The multitude of the stars and what is inside of stars, they would think these awesome thoughts. And that would bring them to the state of awe and humility that would bring about their prophetic visions. I think that the worldview today presents us with a multitude of images and ideas that are so mind-blowing, so expanded that we could think about the huge. Nowadays, thinking about the huge is not just thinking about 500 years. In the time of the Talmud, it speaks about their huge distances. Was a distance that would take a person to walk in 500 years. Okay, that already is expanded, that they speak about large distances in terms of time. But the distances that we contemplate today is like billions of light years. Right? Just in the standard world view of today, we talk about distances of that it takes light traveling at 186,000 miles per second, 15 billion years to travel. That's a huge perspective. On the other hand, we're also shown perspective of the very small. We talk about the inside of atoms and the inside of nucleuses, quarks and whatnot. Visions of what's going on in the, you know, there's a reductionistic perspective, the inside of atoms, which goes incredibly small. I mean, what kind of distances are they? 10 to the minus 23rd powers, centimeters, or...
And then they never get to the basic part, but they keep going smaller and smaller.
Smaller and smaller.
Infinite. Creating dinosaurs.
Yeah, I think that's an incredible phenomena that happened in science, that the scientists that are working on the big picture, like cosmology and the Big Bang, and thinking in the perspective of the whole universe, the whole, right? They've realized that to understand that, they have to understand the totally small, and vice versa, right? Quantum... They speak about all that, what happened in the Big Bang is like quantum fluctuations with the very small. But my point is that the prophets the idea of inspiration, it's not just by sitting back and waiting for it to happen. It is by this dynamic interplay of right brain and left brain. Now, right brain is like the approach of like meditation, right? And undifferentiated mind. Left brain is like study.
Halacha.
Or halacha. Now, the more we work at both, right? The stronger our right brain perspective is, and the stronger our left brain, the more we push out both boundaries in both direction, then the more dynamic tension that's created by the interplay of both, and the more intense is the third thing, that inspiration that's drawn from above.
It's the balance that the priorities are expanded that much.
The more we expand those polarities, anytime that we make this dynamic interplay between the two polarities, it creates like a field that draws down the inspiration from above. The more our perspective, both in the whole and in the part, is, the more we push out in both directions, and do it in like in a playful way, not being clogged or blocked to say that the only way is by this reductionist attitude or the only way is by this holistic attitude. You have to be able to have that freedom and that.
Yeah. I guess what I hear you saying when you talk about playfulness is a really non-compulsive manner of the exercise process, namely goal. Because when you're task oriented, it becomes, there's a compulsive element where you're no longer spontaneous and present.
Right. In this book, he brought an interesting experiment. He said, experimentalists, how do you say it? Experimenters took a group of monkeys and gave them art supplies, paints and brushes and canvases, and taught them how to paint. And the monkeys loved it. They were painting away, and after a while, they were able to produce fairly decent paintings. I mean, as small children might do. After a while, they introduced another element in the experiment. They would offer the monkeys a reward for a successful painting. They would offer them, if a monkey would do a painting that was deemed to be a successful painting, they would give them a banana. The level of creativity plummeted. And the monkeys, instead of, like, before they didn't eat and they didn't sleep and they didn't have sex, they were just painting and painting. They're the greatest time. They loved it. And the point is that they grew. Right, they had growth in their creative expression. As soon as they introduced this external reward, they would just slap on the paint and bring it to see if they got the banana.
In that case, it was like something that was like judgment, you know. Mm-hmm. Even if it was positive, it was still judgment as opposed to unconditional acceptance.
Exactly, and these are like the kind of blocks that block creativity. If we're that block creativity.
It's like the opposite of creativity. It's like self-judgment. It's judgment. You know, they don't go together.
So it seems that these two extremes of total creativity or total blockage of the right brain and the left brain, the tendency in our community today in our world community is to be in one more than the other, to be in one with the other. What Adam was saying is that it's either so much this way or so much that way, you know, and so we're talking about balance.
That's why it's blocked, and that's why there isn't a lot of new innovations and creativity.
So my question really is how?
How to get unblocked?
Or how to find the balance? I mean, for this side it might be unblocked. For this side it might be find the appropriate boundaries. Right? I mean, it depends on which side you're on.
Well, I can tell you, like personally, how it works for me. If I feel like I'm blocked in one side, then I realize I have to embrace the other side. So. It's thing as far as ideas are concerned. If we get stuck in a particular headspace, that you know that I can't hear somebody else's ideas, and I can't accept their ideas as being valid, then we're like painting ourselves into a corner. And I think there's a lot of fear that people have of having a dialogue with people with different kind of ideas because of fear of being.
I'm wondering, can you tell us a little bit about when you paint, when you decide what you're going to paint, what your process is like? how you've integrated this knowledge, this understanding in your art?
Well, my process is both, because I put a lot of my study into my paintings. Mm-hmm. But the very often I just sit down and let it come out. Sometimes I'll sit down with a particular idea of what I want to do and just try to do it. Sometimes I've had experiences where I've thought of a painting that I've wanted to do, trying to represent a particular thing, and I've given up, thought about how I could do it and not knowing how I'd be able to do it, so put it aside. And then I would sit down and try and do something else, and that first painting would come out.
I'll show you some.
Okay, this is a painting of that dynamic interplay of right and left. Okay, in this color scheme, it relates to the primary colors, red and blue and yellow. The interplay between the two opposites is red and blue, the hot and the cold, and yellow represents the balance between them. Notice how the yellow here is like the diagonal in both of them, and there's the red above and the blue below. Here's another one that's very different. What does that say to you? It says here, "V'maskilim yazhiru kezor harakia u'mastiki harabim kekochavim le'olam va'ed." The enlightened ones will shine like the radiance of the firmament, and those who bring many to righteousness like stars forevermore.
Like what?
Stars forevermore. This is just playing. But it has, this too has to do with like the tension of the two opposites, complementary colors being pulled one side to the other. See, here too is like the interplay between the three dimensions. There's the blue and the red and the yellow. Space, time, and spirit. Tomorrow's workshop, I'll dedicate like totally to Sefer Yetzirah, which is dealing with the 22 letters of the alphabet. The three dimensions, space, time, and spirit. You see, We were saying before about how everything in reality now is like put in front of this giant eye of the camera. And the microphone, like it gives us like a more awareness of the impact our actions make. Like when something is put in front of a camera, then it's like it's clear that what has been done doesn't just dissolve into thin air. That there is like a lasting memory, a lasting effect of that in the world. What?
Ripples
or waves. Like in chaos theory, they speak about this idea how the flapping of wings of a butterfly in one part of the world could cause a hurricane somewhere else. This has to do with this idea of space, time, and spirit. Okay, we spoke about creativity, and really, we're all artists, right? The fact that we're alive, and the fact that we have minds, and we have arms and legs, and that we can think, and that we do things, we are all engraving our handiwork on the fabric of reality, right? The fabric of reality. We're all weavers of reality in a very, very big and profound way, because what we do lasts. It doesn't just dissolve into thin air. Everything has its effect, and that effect, we don't even know how much of effect everything has. And the weave of reality is time and space and spirit. We're blessed to be alive, to have the soul, spirit, and to exist here in this space, in this time, and to do what we do. I think it's important that we realize that we're all artists, and we're all taking part in the building of the temple. Right? The temple is our universe. And there's good artists and there's not such good artists. There's terrible artists. There's people who do like destructive type art. They can use a sense of aesthetic and beauty and harmony. But I think that the more we have awareness of the reality that we exist in and how intensely we affect that reality, the more we'll be like conscious artists of doing things in harmony with everything else, doing things towards helping others and healing rather than destroying. And I believe that's building the Beit HaMikdash, building the holy palace, which is ultimately our hearts, for the Shekhinah to dwell in our hearts. And I think that the more that we can broaden our horizons and our perspective and bring down that creative inspiration, and we could actually, you know, do it, make this world a place where the Shekhinah dwells in every heart.
To continue with this presentation, please go to the next cassette.